Thanks for joining us, James. Tell us about Deaf Football Australia, its programs, how many teams are associated with the organisation, and how long it's been running.
So Deaf Football Australia is basically a national team. So we have to find players around the country who are playing, you know, local football, and try and identify and find players who can play for the national team. So at the moment, that takes up a lot of our time, so it's difficult for us to run other teams. Or in other countries, like in the UK, Europe, there's, you know, Man United have a deaf team, but in Australia, at this point, we don't have deaf teams with the A-League clubs and things like that. So we basically have to find players ourselves and try and build, introduce players to training camps, and try to build that squad and teach them how to play the game, because they've got various levels of ability, because a lot of the boys play in association football.
So, James, how did you get involved in this type of football?
I was introduced to Robbie Stanton, who's Sydney FC's National Youth League coach, and Robbie had been involved with deaf football for about 8 years to this day as the head coach. When he came on board, we were getting beat by quite big scores. Him and Abbaside both worked together, and it was basically survival football. So Robert changed the mentality of how we play the game, and obviously at the time the curriculum came in and there was a national approach to playing more proactive football. So he did that, and a couple of years ago I met Robbie for the first time, so 2 or 3 years ago, and I've got a pro license, so I'm more in my roles have always been technical directing, and Robbie's more like a performance coach. So we got together, and we started to evolve the way we work with the players and the way we find players. And so we've just changed the model and got more people working.
So for those who are not up to speed with deaf football, can you give us an idea of the rules that the players play under, the level of hearing impairment of the players who participate in this type of football also?
Well, it's deaf football, but basically the players are hearing impaired. So it's 50% hearing loss in both ears as a minimum. So that makes it difficult in the sense of teaching them, because we may have 2 or 3 players who are totally deaf and they need sign language. And we have other players who were born, got hearing aids early in their life and have never needed sign language.
Mm.
So at the moment, to actually go into what the best method of teaching and teaching the players to play at an high level, which we want them to do, it's difficult, and that's what we're going through at the moment, to try and standardise. We've simplified the football language, so now we do a lot of back end or online learning to explain what a simple sound means. It could mean an awful lot. And we teach the sign language, but in our camp, we involved all coaches, because we also believe, and through some assessments of our players, some surveys we did with them, we realised that a lot of the boys were visual and kinesthetic in the way they want to learn. So they want to do to learn. So, and that was the same with the coaches. So in the last camp, we introduced about 15 different terminologies or words, and everybody had to learn the words. We did it as we were going through the camp, rather than it was just the best way, doing it in the middle of the training session, asking coaches to intervene and provide information. So that's where we're at. So even the coaches are learning, myself and Robbie are learning, some of the players are learning for the first time, and some of the deaf players, they're appreciating the fact that we're trying to help them understand as well.
So are the rules modified at all on the pitch?
No, not at all. Only that on a competitive game, the boys are not allowed to wear hearing aids.
Mm.
So it changes. And that would be something which I've been searching for, someone who's got expertise in understanding how that changes the way they perform. Because we find they can, without the hearing aids, of course, the communication drops, but sometimes the coordination and movement also is impacted as well. So it's a difficult one. In training, we've sometimes pondered if we should train without hearing aids, but we've got so much to teach them, it's difficult to go through that process. So the only thing what looks different is around the field in international games, you have a lot of people with flags. So when the referee blows his whistle, around the field people wear flags so that the player knows that the referee's blown his whistle.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the officiating during the game. Obviously it can be hearing impaired also, but the communication between a referee and the players, is that get a little bit complicated?
I don't think the referees are hearing. They don't use the hearing impaired referees, but I think the referees just treat the game as normal, and if a whistle's blown, then by having the extra people around the field waving flags, then the players stop. Of course, the players can't argue a decision, or they may get frustrated, but it just tends to be normal for a referee, and he's got that support around him to help him inform the players that he's blown his whistle.
So you're a national team, obviously. So we've got the Socceroos, we've got the Matildas, we've got the Pararoos with the disability football. What's your nickname?
Do you know what? I don't think we've got one. I don't think we've got one. I will say this about the FFA. Like, the FFA supporters, they provide us with all the clothing, and Luke Cassidy, the head of performance, is always communicating with us to find out what we're up to, what we're doing. He visited us to watch our last game. So while we're not under their banner in the sense that they give us their support, but we're probably not in the sense if you go on their website, we're not on there. Maybe that's something we'd like to change in the future. But the FFA have been very good to us, and they're always supporters and showing interest in us. And you know, so that's been a good positive over the last few years.
So tell us about the standard of international competition, and whereabouts in the rankings do Australia come in world competition?
So my experience of an international tournament was 2 years ago in qualifiers for the Olympics. We played against Iran and Japan, and Iran had not been beaten in Asia in 8 years. Previously, we'd been beat by big scores. We ended up losing 4-0 against them. And me and Robbie would probably say that Iranian team, given that some of the players we believe had got hearing impairment through the war, so previously they were hearing players.
Mm.
So the quality, I would think that team would compete in NPL.
Mm.
So if you put it in them terms, you sort of, the Australian team at the moment is a collection of association players who are having to go into international tournaments to play against, you know, an half decent NPL team, which is tough. And the other thing, what is different to the NPL is if you play Japan, they've got a completely different playing style to Iran.
Yeah,
very technical players, very similar to what the Japanese national teams are like. Very playing tight areas. Very technical. Iran were very physically strong and mobile. And Korea, for instance, they have a lot of support from their national body, in the sense of a lot of their coaches are from their national setup. Most coaches involved are A licensed or pro licensed coaches, because you're playing the same game. There's no restrictions. The brand of football, how we teach the players, is exactly the same as how you would teach anything at international level.
And do you have any, whether it's Australian player or any of these Asian players, are they playing in professional competition, any of these guys?
I believe Turkey have been world champions, dominated over the last 10 or 15 years. And Turkey, I believe a lot of their players play in Division 2 in Turkey.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's a mixture of players who in some countries are well supported. I believe Germany's got a lot of club teams supported by their national body, and I guess that's what we're missing. We need Sydney FC to have a team, Melbourne City to have a team around the country where we could, we have this catchment where we can go and look at players and find players. At the moment, we're finding them through advertising, and because of privacy laws, we can't go to the FFA and ask them for a database of every player that they know of, what's ticked the box to say that he's got ear impairment. Mm. That's not allowed. So we've got to find them through advertising. And in recent times, since we've grown our coaching staff, we've got coaches now looking for players. We have found a number of young, talented NPL players, under-18s, under-20s, what we believe will really change our success in the next 5 or 6 years, you know, 5 or 10 years.
Mm.
It's tough, but we are moving forward.
Well, you're doing a wonderful, thing for people with hearing impairment who may decide that sport's not for them, but there's no reason why they can't play it. People like yourself and Robbie, obviously, encouraging young people to get active and fulfil their potential in this area. What are some of the benefits that young people or people who play the sport are gaining because they're involved in a team sport and keeping active and all the other great stuff that comes with being part of a national team?
I think that's why we've gone down this path of... So we've gone down a path of simplifying the way we coach. We've gone down a path of coaching through game principles. Of course, when we're going into a tournament and leading up to key games, we still do the more complex tactical approach, you know, if we've analysed the opponent and we need to work on certain aspects of the game. But in the long term, we'd like to go down this path so that we can roll out and bring in more players and even go to communities and schools and be able to teach football. Because recently I was talking with Arsenal football schools, and in England they have a program that when refugees come into England, they use football to teach them English language.
Mm.
So we'd like to eventually go down the path of being able to use football to teach sign language.
Mm.
But at the moment, it's not a case that all my staff are going out to learn sign language. We just want to build it through learning through the football, and eventually we'll build our understanding.
Well, James, it's a fantastic program, mate. I'm just learning about it right now with what you've told me about it, so I'll keep an eye on it in the future. Any big tournaments coming up soon?
Yeah, we've got World Cup qualifiers in April, May 2018. So we in Korea.
Mm.
So this is where it gets a little bit tough and challenging for us. At the moment, it's going to cost the players out of their own pocket around $3,500.
Mm.
And then, obviously, we want to send our best team. So we are looking for support and sponsors and whatever we can get to support them players to go abroad and of course, the coaching staff.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a call out to see if there's anyone who has any interest in being involved and supporting us. Unfortunately, when it comes to funding, a lot of the sports funding in Australia is completely down to performance.
Mm.
So even with the deaths, if we're not number three or number four in Asia, then we don't qualify for any funding.
If your story has resonated with people, what can they do to help you out? Is there a website, or is there a number they can ring to offer their support?
Well, I mean, we have Deaf Football Australia Facebook, so they can contact us through the Facebook, or if they get in touch with you guys, maybe you could pass on our details to them. Any support would be... we are looking for long-term sponsors and support of the organisation and to help us in many ways, you know, not just financial, but also skill and skill sets, strategic planning, that type of thing, to really continue building the organisation so we can go out to grassroots and start to give back a little bit to the community, the deaf community as well.
Fantastic, James. Like I said, I really feel enhanced now that I know more about Deaf Football Australia. I'm going to keep an eye on your World Cup qualifiers coming up, and of course we'll report on it here in FNR, so just let us know when the planning starts and we'll follow your journey right through to whatever that takes you by way of World Cup qualifying.
Thank you very much.